All right, the House Civil Law Committee's Subcommittee on Data Practices will come to order. Welcome, everybody. Happy to have as an ex officio member the chair of the Civil Law Committee, Representative Lesh, with us. And we have a quorum, although one isn't necessarily needed. But this is, as some of you have figured out, kind of an odd circumstance. We have a subcommittee hearing convening. We have no bill before us, which is a little bit unorthodox. So there's nothing to amend. There's nothing to take up. That said, as you'll see, we have some amendments, and we're going to have a good discussion in our remaining hour and 12 minutes or so. So I just wanted to welcome everyone there. Everyone here, I think, as the author acknowledges, as everyone acknowledges, everyone's heart is in the right place. We're all just trying to make this bill better. We understand, obviously, there are people who don't like the idea of the bill, but the fact is, I think we're all focused on, if the bill is going to pass, making it as good a bill as it can be when it comes to data practices and other related issues. I just wanted to quickly sort of summarize the data practices and open meeting provisions of the bill, if I could, very quickly, just to make sure we're all on the same page. I don't know that it's necessary to go through chapter and verse, but just kind of after the Civil Law Committee hearing that Representative Lesh convened, I think we have a little bit better sense than we did about what the real issues are. So, as I understand it, what we're looking at here, so the Minnesota Insurance Marketplace, MIM, is a state agency for the purposes of the Data Practices Act. So we've got that covered. And there were a lot of good questions, Representative Holberg, others. I think we nailed down certain concepts. So that's one of them. The bill classifies the data collected by MIM on individuals, employees of employers, and employers as private data on individuals or non-public. The bill also says that the MIM may share this non-public data with state and federal agencies and other entities if the exchange of the data is reasonably necessary to carry out the functions of the MIM. State agencies must share this non-public data with the MIM if the exchange of the data is reasonably necessary to carry out the functions of the MIM. Section 7 of the bill, which we'll be focusing a lot on, and on this new committee engrossment on page 9. So really the action here is on page 9 and afterwards. That's what we're really focusing on. But that Section 7 allows the MIM to derive summary data from this non-public data. And the Data Practices Act defines summary data as, there's a long definition in there, statistical records, reports derived from data, etc. And there's a whole strand or stream, I guess, on the data practices about what summary data is. We also have, when it comes to the exchange, when it comes to the online stuff, that MIM must provide a Tennyson warning to any individual asked to supply private data to the marketplace. The warning must list each person or entity authorized by law to receive or access the data and how the data will be used, and the MIM cannot share or use the data in any other manner. The bill also requires that the MIM provide the data subject a written notice of the data subject's rights related to the handling of genetic information, which is written informed consent for use or dissemination of genetic information about a person. There was some discussion at the meeting on Friday, the civil law meeting, about the open meeting law, and Chair Lesh tasked this group with having a discussion on that too, though technically not data practices, it's kind of sort of related. And so my understanding of the open data stuff in there is this, that there are three cases. It basically says that the open meeting law requires except, and the problem is the except part, and I think we'll hear from some folks today about maybe some heartburn over that. The three exceptions, as I understand them, is that meetings regarding personnel negotiations may be closed at the discretion of the board, meetings regarding contract negotiations may be closed at the discretion of the board, and meetings regarding private, not public, non-public, or trade secret information may be closed to the public at the discretion of the board. And I think we'll hear today there's some people who might want some more specificity there, but those are the three areas as I understand it. And then just looking at notes from the civil law hearing in terms of some of the concerns, and I won't get all of them, of course, but the ones that stuck out to me were, I know that Representative Holberg and others brought up issues about a destruction schedule. You know, okay, fine, you can't share this, so goes the thought, but at what point, if any, is it destroyed? You collected data, even if you can't share it, even if we're satisfied about that, at what point do you toss it and shred it, and at what point does it go away? And the answer that we got was basically that, well, federal law requires the MIM to establish a retention and destruction schedule. It's not in the bill here, but we know that at some point one needs to be established, and there may be folks that want more specificity there. There was a question raised, too, about selling the data and whether there needs to be anything explicit in here or not, saying it can't be sold. I don't know if there does or not. Arguably not, but that's an interesting point. So those were some, certainly not all, of the points that were raised. And rather than me going on, I'd like to just, I think the best thing to do now is, well, first, I want to give due respect to the author of the bill of House File 5, Representative Atkins, who was kind enough to join us this morning. And I don't know, Representative Atkins, if you have anything you want to say or tee up or
Mr. Chair, I have somewhere 45 to 60 minutes worth of comments.
Super.
But I'll reserve those for later. I just appreciate y'all getting together at 8:15, and I genuinely believe that this there's an earnest desire to. I think everybody's sense of protecting data is the same, and we want to make sure it's only used for the purposes that that serve the needs of the marketplace, and not for extraneous other outcomes or uses. I put a great deal of credence in the and hope in the work of this committee. As far as logistics, my desire is to marry up whatever the recommendations of this committee are, ideally with state government finance. Mr. Chairman, I think you serve on that committee, so it might be a good spot in which to do it. It also has jurisdiction to some degree over the issues here. And my understanding of the timing for that committee is that will be next week. I believe it's slated for possibly 2 days, starting on Monday and marking the bill up and taking amendments on Wednesday. If that works in your, and if it doesn't, we'll find some other opportunity. But that's kind of my hope, and we'll look forward to the recommendations of the group.
Thanks, Representative Atkins. I just want to ask the chair of the umbrella committee here, with respect, if he has any comments.
Well, Mr. Chair, I am interested primarily today in doing this work in a setting whereby we have it on the record. Also, I have had conversations with Representative Holberg. Representative Holberg had expressed an interest to get certain amendments on there, but had also expressed reservations about doing a patchwork, and so I'd be interested to hear from Representative Holberg about the overall nature of what needs to be changed regarding data practices, and then work from there and then see which amendments would work well within that context. So I appreciate the chair of the subcommittee allowing me to sit as a ex officio member. I do want to track it because I think it's an important matter.
Thank you, Representative Lesch. Before we go to you, Representative Holberg, I don't mean to put you on the spot, but it would be, I think, good to hear your general comments about direction. The way I think we should do it is hear from Representative Holberg. I know there are members of the public here who are eager to say something, but I want to make sure those are brief and to the point so that we can have a discussion here. I don't know that we're going to need another hearing. I think some of this can be accomplished somewhat offline, and I know that's a little bit ironic in a committee about data openness and open meetings and all the rest. The point is we can't only do this by hearings, in part because we don't have a bill before us. So I think what I'd like to see come out of here in the next hour and now 2 minutes is a set of recommendations. They may not be all parsed out chapter and verse, but a set of even bullet-pointed ideas about what we think ought to happen. If we need a second committee, I'd leave that to the discretion of the chair of the full committee. Otherwise, maybe Mr. Gehring or others in staff can draft some language for Representative Atkins' consideration. But the goal, my goal at least, at the end of an hour here, is to come up with some tangible suggestions, whether they are fleshed out in amendment form or not. And that's a lot to accomplish in an hour. So, Representative Holberg, any kind of opening thoughts about direction or substance?
Well, I think that the approach taken in the bill as introduced is pretty unusual. My preference would be is that we start with a premise that this organization follows current state law and makes a case for those instances when it would be problematic to the function of the exchange to have to comply. And one of the discussions that we had last week is that generally what you would do if you wanted to classify data within Chapter 13 is that you would identify where you were sharing specific sets of data and what their classification should be and actually spell that out rather than these blanket exceptions and large discretion. Like in the case of the open meeting law, the current open meeting law allows for closing meetings specific things, negotiations, personnel issues, that's already in current law. So to the degree that they can't function or need an additional exception, I think it just makes more sense that they say, okay, this is the law, where do we have to look for exceptions or differences? Rather than these blanket, this doesn't apply. For example, in the case of the being exempt from the contracting law, one of the examples that I brought forward was the design-build process, where they looked at the type of contracts. So, I would prefer in that case not to have an exemption from contract law, but rather, or procurement, but rather to look at other models currently in place in state government where we do shield large amounts of information during the process because of the unique nature of it, but at some point the information becomes public. Those are three examples where I think this bill initially has taken a really unprecedented approach that I think if they kind of step back a little bit and maybe look at a different way, we'll have a much better product. In the data sharing, we allow DEED and Department of Revenue to share specific data sets for specific purposes. And so, to the degree that they need to access particular data sets for a given purpose, I think what we see in this bill is for basically, for the exchange to function. That's a really broad standard. That's why I asked the question about the sale of the data. You could make an argument that if they needed money for the good of the functioning, you could sell it. There's no prohibition here, and because they've exempted themselves from so much of current law, I'm just concerned that the approach is problematic.
Thank you, Representative Holberg, and that's consistent, I think, with your testimony last Friday. I think the phrase that you used a couple times was that this shouldn't be necessarily so special, and you sort of asked the question, well, why are you so special? I think your point seems to be the presumption should always be with this group and no other that you're subject to all the terms and conditions unless you can carve out the unless, but you shouldn't go into it with special status. I think, am I accurately paraphrasing you? That's
yes.
Representative Holberg. Okay. So let me just do this.
I'm sorry. And to that point, you asked about the amendments. We have amendments that are kind of left over from last week, but they're really not. They wouldn't be my first choice to start working through these amendments because I think that the approach the bill takes is the wrong approach and that we should start with the assumption that they are subject to state law and then have them make the case in those areas in which it would be impossible to function if they didn't get an exception and be able to justify that in the terms of that problem.
Representative Holberg, I think some of this is just drafting style. For example, if you look on the very first page of this latest engrossment, it has a kind of an unnecessary aura of specialness about it. I say unnecessary because the actual language isn't as sort of special as it might appear. So lines 110 and 111 say classification and sharing of data are governed by Section 62V.06. So we all know Chapter 13, the Data Practices Act, as being the statute that deals with data. So here you're seeing this exotic new creature called 62V.06, and it seems special, in your words. It seems sort of distinct and unusual and special and exotic. But when you go to that actual 62V.06, which is page 9, it's basically a fancy way of saying Chapter 13 applies. And I realize there are more exceptions than that, but I don't know why it was drafted that way, and we're not here to undo that necessarily, but when you actually look at the language, the first sentence is of this exotic creature called 62V.06 is the rather unremarkable and conventional statement that the Minnesota insurance marketplace is a state agency and is subject to all provisions of Chapter 13. So it may just be that for one reason or another, the drafting of this, I'm not saying your concern is unfounded. It's not unfounded. I just mean that's one example where maybe it's less special than meets the eye, because when you go to this exotic creature, it just says, oh, by the way, Chapter 13 applies.
Well,
and Representative Hulbert.
Mr. Chair, I mean, I don't think that's unusual. We see this in other areas where you have this cross-reference in Chapter 13. I don't think that's that unusual. I think where you get into the unusual stuff is later on in Section 7.
Representative Hulbert, and before I know there are a couple testifiers who want to talk, but maybe one of the bullet points we could adopt in amendment form is just to simply say explicitly in there, you can't sell this stuff. As you point out, it may not be necessary, but then again, you're right. If we're going to keep language in there that says, and I'm paraphrasing here, that the sort of exceptions for, what's the language, for the exceptions for, running the MIM, where it's can't share unless it would be reasonably necessary, et cetera, since that's pretty broad, and since one of your concerns is selling, even though that practically might never come up, maybe we need comfort in language in there simply about selling the stuff. Oh. I don't know what you think, Representative Hulbert.
Well, Mr. Chair, if you go back to the original comments that I made, what you should have here is authorized by law. We, as policymakers, should set the standards on where this stuff goes and why. And so you wouldn't need a prohibition of sales if you do what we generally do in this area, is we give them the authority to share. And if we do not give, that's that little phrase, reasonably necessary, is probably the biggest problem in this whole issue. Because we've given all the latitude to a governing board that can close meetings beyond what other groups can do, et cetera, to make these decisions. And I, for one, am not comfortable with that. And so if we go back to the model that virtually every other entity in the state adheres to, they follow the guidance provided by the policymakers on to what extent that they can share information and to what extent they can collect information.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Lesh.
I wonder, I share some of Representative Hulbert's concerns, but in the interest of getting something moving on this, I wonder, first of all, recognizing on behalf of the author that this is a really complex bill. It's a big bill. And I'm going to guess that the drafters didn't go out and outsource each little piece to specific experts in every area, including data practices. So perhaps there wasn't a data practices expert crafting the data practices provisions of this bill. Maybe there was. If that's the case, then I would really like to hear from the testifier that the author has who can explain that. However, I'm just going to give them the benefit of the doubt and assume that they did the best they can in the context of all the other stuff they had to do for this bill. So if there is a philosophy of why the data practice provisions were drafted this way, I would like to hear from the author's testifiers on that. In the absence, and I would add that it doesn't need to be made up. No one needs to come up and say, well, yeah, we really meant to do it for this reason. Don't do that. If no one has information on it, it's fine. We're not looking at blowing anything up in here. I just want to get an idea of the philosophy. Now, on the second part, then, I would like to hear Representative Holberg's suggestions of how that could be restructured and modified with the author's folks in this room to ensure that it's acceptable. Those two steps would be what I would be interested in hearing, but I'm not the chair, so.
Well, I agree. I think we should get to that. I just want to do right by one individual who was on the list last time when we ran out of time in terms of public testimony, and he had been on the list last time, and that's, I think, Mr. Neumeister. I think that's correct, right? Oh, that's right. He was out of town, and he had asked to testify. So I just want to sort of get that out of the way first, and then Representative Leschet, we'll go with your suggestion. Mr. Neumeister.
Mr. Chairman, members of the subcommittee, Mr. Representative Atkins, how are you? Let's just start out. $1.3 million people, $40 million guaranteed income, the way the current bill is. An agency that, if you look at the open meeting provisions, you could put a thing on the door. Like, and also, I did a blog posting, and it's in your packet, where you can put a perpetual sign, hey, this is closed. This is an important deal for transparency and accountability, because what you do in the general framework of the bill, you allow for a lot of things to be closed, but how the public finds out why you chose certain kinds of insurance companies to offer plans or whatever, you don't see a lot. You rely a lot on the legislative auditor. You rely a lot in the proposed bill on reports. But it's very important for the public to be able to do things, the news media, things like that. So, Mr. Chairman, my comments are very specific to the open meeting law and the data practices provisions. Let's go to page 3. This would start on lines 3-6 through 3-14. This is the first time since about 1987 or 88 when the Greater Minnesota Corporation, which was a Purpage initiative, were basically all meetings of a state agency, right off the bat, from my perspective, is to be closed. Now, the nub about this issue is as follows, and here's a copy of the open meeting law, if you could just pass it out to the legislators, and what it goes against contrary. On lines, let's just go on lines 312, 313, where it says meetings regarding private, not public, non-public, or trade secret information are closed to the public. That's pretty broad. Now, if you go to the current 13D05, subdivision 1, and one of the things that legislators of both parties have been talking about, how it goes contrary to that, data that are not public data may be discussed at a meeting subject to this chapter. Public bodies discuss it all the time. In the late 80s, early 90s, I was very much involved in PUC stuff, where a lot of corporations, a lot of people give information, and PUC constantly talked about this information. In order for the public to get a general view to know what they are doing with the services or whatever. So to a view to where, and speaking with Representative Atkins and the general counsel, at least with the general counsel, I think they have gone to the point that they just could be drafting. I don't think it was their intent to do it or whatever. But what's happening now is that they're starting to get feedback to sort of say, sunshine, accountability. What are you going to do with, you know, constant making things about insurance, about people? So I think what you can do is take a look at the general principles and what is current law. My suggestion is basically get rid of that section. And I said that in my blog posting. Now, when you get into contract negotiations, personnel negotiations, as you know, there's going to be some unclassified people that are managerial. I don't know how many that is. But again, all that is discussed in regular public bodies, whether it be the counties, the cities. You can go on and on and on. And I have not seen where the threshold is there in speaking with the general counsel why they need that. It was just mentioned, and I forget the general counsel's last name. I apologize. But he indicated that maybe with some specific information when they talk about the tax credits. But the issue behooves me, is the board going to make a decision about tax credits on individuals? I don't know. But I think one of the things is that it can be done, I believe, under current law. So I want to encourage you to focus very specifically on that. When entities have had to come in with exceptions, you'll see it historically, it's very specific exceptions, and it has always been the case with that.
Mr.
So I'd
Meister,
like to encourage you to
let me just hone in on what I see as what you're talking about. You're really mostly concerned with line 3.12 and 3.13 because it says meetings regarding all of this stuff, unlike the others which say at the discretion of the board, this says are closed to the public.
Yes.
There's no discretion. It just says they are closed, and it includes a lot of stuff, private, not public, non-public, or trade secret information. you're saying that's too broad. If you really had to pick one, that's what you're most concerned about, right?
Yes.
Okay.
But Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, it may be heartburn to some, but it's a great heartburn just for anybody that believes in public accountability, transparency, and public scrutiny on this kind of thing. So it's not a political.
No, I'm just trying to figure out your chief point of concern.
That is
that
my
seems to be.
And the other on one and two, I just share with you. I think again that discretion. I'm just pointing out that on one and two, public bodies for decades have been discussing this very openly. In speaking with Mr. Turpin, I think when I brought out an example, when regular public bodies do that, what they do, they'll do less than a quorum, which is fine. It's done all the time, but they come on back and okay. They still discuss all the issues publicly, so I can get a so the public or I, if I want to oversee this group, I can get a sense of what's happening, or maybe ask more questions or whatever than what is currently proposed.
Okay.
Now, Mr. Chairman, when we go back to the data practices provisions, and that's in section 7, it goes on and on. Specificity. It could have avoided a lot of these kinds of things. If you just and it's constant, you know, that flow chart that they outlined that was given to you, I believe, it says what the data sets are or what they're using. So pursuant to blah, 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 the marketplace board shall set up a system to where income verification with deed shall be. Or, you know, as simple as that, what has been done for 35-plus years here when information is being shared, and particularly in these kinds of situations. So there's language out there. You just got to roll up the sleeves to do some things on that. And okay. So then everybody knows what.
Thank you, Mr. Neumeister. Representative Lesch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Neumeister, this process, will this require a complete restructuring of the data practice provisions as it stands in there, or can these be relatively easily amended? You said roll up your sleeves, but...
Yeah, Mr. Chairman...
Mr. Neumeister?
Chairman Lesch, I think it's pretty easy. I mean, I'll give you an example. I mean, there are wording kinds of templates that a number of people who've testified before here could offer suggestions. And that even goes to where, speaking with Mr. Turpin about the open meeting section, where he was focusing on where they would be interested to close, is when there's discussion of tax credits, who should be given tax credits for under this plan. But the point is, in this regards, well, will the board ever discuss those kinds of things? I don't know. Will the board discuss appeals of Rich Neumeister if he's an individual that has to apply for insurance exchange? I don't know, but you know, those are the kinds of things that need to be discussed. The two other points I wanted to share was, this is on page 6, lines 6 and 10. And this is in regards, basically, because all of us are aware of what has happened with the DVS scandal. We're very much aware of some security breaches and breaks, just in general. So the whole issue of how they're going to audit, accountability, adequate protections, all those things I don't see a lot being discussed a lot. They may have it in some written plan somewhere, but I think it's important for the committee to take a look at that. And then the bottom line, and this is for access, which comes into play as historically the subcommittee and the committee has always done. There are a number of us people who are not literally online people. Hopefully in the plans, you can get on the record that when the online marketplace or the marketplace opens for business, that people can come in and still apply, and that they'll have staff to help those people or whatever at some place where it's not constantly online, because there's a fair number of people about that. So, Mr. Chairman, in summary, what I've done, you pretty much have the thrust of where I'm focusing on by the blog, which is in your packet, a blog post I did. Number two, I've given you at least the section of the open meeting law where I see there's different philosophies and where I think the Marketplace Board does not need to be to have this broad exception. I just want to guarantee that the Marketplace Board does not become like a children's clubhouse, which can play with $40 million every year. Number two, that they have impact on 1.3 million people's lives. Children's clubhouses are very much veiled in secrecy. And I know it's not the intent of Representative Atkins to have that. Speaking with him directly and working with him over the years, Mr. Chairman, and knowing about this board or this group. So let's not have it be a children's clubhouse, and let's have scrutiny, accountability, and transparency. And the two big tools are that open meeting law and that data practices. And I think that's good that you put that provision as an amendment.
So there's no... Mr. Neumeister, thanks.
No...
thanks for your testimony.
Thank you.
And I don't mean to rush people, but we've got 40 minutes. And I think we are really zeroing in on some stuff here. Let me just take the open meetings piece on page 3. I'm wondering whether either Representative Atkins or Mr. Turpin or someone else cares to weigh in on this. But what about this piece, just theoretically and conceptually, since that's what we're dealing with here, kind of theories and concepts and not so much specific amendment language. Online, for example, 3.12. So you'll see that, I don't know, Mr. Turpin, do you have the bill in front of you? Page 3, line 12. This provision seems to be different. 1 and 2 say at the discretion of the board. 3 doesn't. It just says these meetings are closed to the public. And it's just meetings regarding private, regarding not public, regarding non-public or trade secret. Do you would you be open to a little more specificity there, a few more guardrails in place? What do you think about that language? Are you open to some changes there,
Mr. Chair, Representative?
Mr.
Certainly,
Turpin.
And I mean, as was requested earlier, just some broad overview or a little bit of homing in on some of the broad principles that went into some of the drafting. I think the beginning principle was that Chapter 13 would apply to all data, and there was an attempt to try and create a subset of that data that were about individuals using the marketplace. And what we were trying to do was really draw a parallel to some of the classification of, for instance, like welfare data, where you flip the presumption to being one of private data on individuals who are seeking services or receiving services through welfare, through the welfare system. And so the attempt there was really to hone in on those times when an individual is using the marketplace to access coverage, to receive assistance, to get verification of their identity, for setting up an account, and was not intended to be broad use to cover things like, you know, navigators who may participate or who may work with, or contractors who may work with. So I think there's an ability to look maybe to 13.46 and some of the provisions there that really hone in on things like verification of an individual's identity, determination of eligibility, determination of amount of assistance. Those are all phrases, functionality that's identified within 13.46 that I think is a good model, and was the intent having been one who worked on this in artfully done. So.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Turpin. That helps, because I think we're kind of closer to one another than meets the eye here. I mean, it sounds like everyone is intending, generally speaking, for Chapter 13 to apply. On the open meetings piece, though, just on my initial question on line 3.12, would you be open to a little more specificity there as to open meetings, that particular piece, line 3.12 and 3.13? Mr. Turpin?
Mr. Chair, Representative, certainly, and I apologize because it was a roundabout way to approach back to your to addressing your question, which was one of the provisions in the open meeting law in 1305 deals with welfare data that's not public. And so there already exists provisions within the open meeting law for closure of meetings to discuss welfare data that's not public. And again, so this The hope would be to apply a provision such that we're not in the situation where the board would be prevented from discussing welfare data related to its determination of MA eligibility determinations, which it will do, but then would not be able to close a meeting related to determination of eligibility for APTC or for other functions of the exchange eligibility determination. So I think the attempt there to not lose that ability to close it for that type of, to discuss specific information about an individual related to eligibility.
I got it. Thanks. Representative Portman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It seems that on line 3.12, the situations described are ones where the board would have to close the meeting to protect private information. I mean, we have two things we're trying to accomplish, I think we're trying to deal with here. One, we want open meetings, so we want to know what this board is doing. We don't want decisions made in secret. But the other concern we have in this subcommittee is protecting individuals' data. And I think what line 3.12 is trying to say, if I understand it, is that if the board has concluded in a discussion, they're going to reveal something about individuals' private, non-public data, they have to close it. Or if it's a trade secret, and it's been determined that it's a trade secret. So, I mean, I understand it's phrased differently in this subdivision 3 than it is in 1 and 2, but I think the reason is to protect data. So, I mean, we have that tension here, where we're trying to accomplish both things, but it makes sense to me if the board concludes they're going to reveal private data about Melissa Hortman's medical records in this meeting, that they then can't have that be in an open meeting where the public can be there.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Holbert.
I mean, we were passed out the current open meeting law, and it clearly allows for that in current law, so we are creating confusion here when in this bill we use different terminology, different standards. We now where people know what this means. I don't know what the bill means. And when I read and I listen about the only thing that I don't think we may have covered is a trade secret, there is not in 13, I believe it's somewhere else, you have the whole trade secret thing, and we worked on it a number of years ago, and I don't know the trade secret language as it relates to open meeting law. I don't know if that's been addressed. It's certainly been addressed in contracting and in other areas where you have the ability to shield trade secrets. So, again, I think the approach in this bill is problematic. I would rather see only exceptions to open meeting law. There's a broad latitude with health data, medical data, welfare data, mental health data, and when you keep them under the umbrella of the current law, you get the protections in there that require the recording of the meeting and all the other provisions that go with it. When you start crafting your own open meeting law just for this, I don't know what you lose, and it's what makes me nervous. And just Representative Simon, I don't know how much public testimony you want to take today, but on Friday I distinctly remember Mr. Gemberling saying he would withhold his other comments if there was going to be another meeting, and I think he has would like to weigh in on some of these things as well.
Sure, and now seems like a good time for that. Mr.
Sure.
Representative Horvin.
A follow-up for this dialogue. Sure. I agree with you. I think I agree with you completely, Representative Holberg, because then the standards that have been developed in another area can apply in this situation. So the question is whether the drafter and the author should think about incorporating a reference to 13D.05 or whether that's unnecessary since it already exists in law, and the Holberg Amendment indicated that this board is already subject to Chapter 13, though I don't know if it indicated 13 and 13D, but perhaps in line in this subdivision 3, lines 3.12, there should be a reference to 13D.05. So we're referring to existing law and then incorporate the concern about trade secrets. Because there may be a whole body of, you know, case disputes that have further developed how this applies. When in saying this, I mean 13D05.
Right, and Representative Hortman, I think it may be that after this meeting, we'll have to have a discussion with Mr. Gehring or maybe others as well about the redundancy issue, which is really what this is. Do we need to carve out exceptions, especially when those exceptions are already in the underlying law? You mentioned maybe one exception to the exception being trade secrets, but other than that, it may be that we just don't need this stuff. Representative Holbert?
Well, but I think it's more problematic than lines, 12 and 13. If you look on page 3, lines 8 and 9, meetings regarding personnel negotiations may be closed at the discretion of the board. In the open meeting law, we say when negotiations can and can't be closed, when they're open, what has to be recorded. By having this language in this bill, then what trumps what? And can they set up their own particular scheme and close negotiations, not record them, never have any record, and just come out with a final deal that nobody knows how we got there? And so that's why I think the way the bill is written is problematic, in that it doesn't start with the assumption that state law applies.
Well, when I was speaking of redundancy, Representative Holberg, I was including all of this. So it may be that we just less is more here. But I think that's a discussion for offline with Mr. Gehring and others to see if that's, in fact, the case, and it may be.
And just for...
Representative Holberg.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. Trade secrets is classified as non-public. So I think, I don't think we have very far to go to address your concern.
I would like to turn it over now to Mr. Gemberling, and I know he does have some thoughts. He and I conferred briefly before the meeting. Mr. Gemberling, if you could just introduce yourself briefly again and proceed with your testimony, mindful of the fact that we have less than a half an hour.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. My name is Don Gemberling. At least for a while, I'm here for the Minnesota Coalition on Government Information, which is, I came up with a marketing slogan for the transparency people. I like that. God, maybe it'll work. Let me start with the open meeting law. Years of effort to deal with all kinds of situations under the open meeting law. What you put into it is standards by which you can judge the body that's closing a meeting, its behavior, whether or not it meets legislative objectives. Under the current open meeting law, a body can close a meeting to discuss any data that's not public. But it's got to be reasonably necessary to something on the agenda. There has to be a record. If there's a vote on something, it has to be recorded. But under the current open meeting law, you can close any meeting, subject to that standard. Now, at some point, somebody said, well, there are some kinds of meetings that we ought to close just by the very nature of the data that's being discussed. And what the legislature did there was they say must be closed. So that covers things like mental health data and welfare data and some forms of investigative data. Then there's the attorney-client thing and those kinds of things. But as Representative Holbert points out, there's all this other stuff around that to assure accountability, okay? So when I look at these provisions, I say, it's kind of back to Representative Holberg's basic point, which the chair has adopted, which is, what is this about this particular body that they need to do business differently than anybody else, okay? And if they can make a case, in the past, you've been willing to create another exception to the open meeting law. An example of that would be the Hennepin County Medical Center. They came in several years ago and said, healthcare is really competitive. Our board that runs the hospital can't be doing some of this stuff in the public. And you created different treatment for their data. Okay? Now, it's not in the Data Practices Act. I think it's in a session, or it's not in the open meeting law. I think it's in a session law. Okay? So the broadness of this, the standard that's in the current bill is, for personnel and contract negotiations, the standard is discretion. Discretion isn't a standard. Mm-hmm. It's free will. One of the things I noticed, when I worked in state government, I was in the civil service tradition. Okay, everybody who works here in this organization is in the unclassified service. Okay, in theory, contracts could be negotiated with all of those people behind closed doors. Okay? And I don't think you want to go there, no matter what political party you belong to. That just doesn't feel right to me as a citizen. Okay? Now, to Representative Lesch's point, which I think was really a good one, you ask who basically, I'll put words in your mouth, who did this? What was their level of expertise? And that's what I picked up on when I first looked at this bill. Some of the technical stuff. If you look at lines 312 and 313, the broad requirement to close meetings, it says you can do that for private, not public, non-public, or trade secret information. Well, that sentence could read, meetings regarding not public data are closed to the public. That's all it has to say. Okay? So when I see that kind of drafting that just doesn't feel necessary, I wonder what was the expertise that went into it. Okay? You adopted the term not public, so you wouldn't have to say over and over, private, confidential, non-public, protected, non-public. It's not a classification. It's just a way of saying things simpler. Okay? The other thing I have a question about, again, from that perspective, is there's a provision in the data section that I think is intended to say, let me get the right spot. It's lines 10.2 to 10.4 on page 10. I look at that and I say, I think I know what this means. I think what it means is the marketplace can do summary data that doesn't have anything to do with individuals, okay? In the data practices act, you're extracting summary data from data about individuals. But you don't have to authorize that. They can do that anyway, okay? The reason for the summary data provisions in the Data Practices Act were you wanted to make sure that when you've got private and confidential data, you don't shut off access to it by research people, members of the public, that kind of thing. We're trying to figure out how the government is doing stuff. And so you provided a way to, for summary data to be extracted. So when I look at a section like a sentence like that, I go, what are they trying to do? Okay? And if what they're trying to, if my guess is correct, they can do it anyway. There's nothing that prevents them from doing it. Okay? Because you haven't regulated that, basically. So, in summary, we're really kind of back to where we were the other day, which is the more careful you are in how you say what you say, the more you'll decide how this organization operates. It'll operate with transparency, privacy, that kind of thing.
Mr. Gamerling, thank you. It's always great to get the benefit of your experience on this stuff. I do have a question, though, for you, just to ponder. You don't have to spend time now if you don't know the answer, but maybe you can ponder it overnight or for a few hours. If you look at the language that Representative Holberg has flagged for us, one example of it is line 9.34. This business about exceptions in the case of something that is reasonably necessary to carry out the functions. You see that?
Mm-hmm.
It appears several places. That's just the
yep.
one that caught my eye. I'm wondering if you could give some thought, doesn't have to be now and here and on the record, but just generally speaking, give some thought as to what kind of specificity you would be looking for. So if we were to decide as a group that, yeah, we probably want to be more specific than just say reasonably necessary, or is that something that is so specific to this that really that's really Mr. Turpin's or someone or the author's a purview? I don't want to step on their toes either. It's their bill and it's their initiative. I just mean if you had thoughts that weren't exchange specific about how to make that language a little bit more workable, we'd appreciate the benefit of your thoughts. Do you have any now? Or if
oh, yeah.
you don't, you can think about
yeah,
it.
Mr.
Okay.
Representative,
or, Mr. Gamerling, go ahead. I mean, I assume you've seen this kind of thing before, the reasonably necessary species of language. So,
I think part of the problem with the bill, it assumes some things about the Data Practices Act that just aren't right. Okay? The current standard in the Data Practices Act for what people can do with private or confidential data on people. It's a different standard for data that's not about people. That's historic. Is that data can be used, shared, etc., if that use or sharing is necessary to carry out a program authorized by the legislature or the federal government. Now, frankly, that's not a real tight standard. Okay?
So, Mr. Gehrman, let me stop you there. So this is, again, really maybe more of a redundancy issue than anything else. You're saying that in current law, if all this said was Chapter 13 applies, let's just pretend for a minute.
Yeah.
You're saying under Chapter 13, there's already something in there that says reasonably necessary to carry out. So it's really an issue of redundancy. It's not that you necessarily object to the language per se, it's that it's not necessary because it already exists someplace else. Am I getting you right?
Mr. Chairman, essentially correct, except if you have now two different standards and you can choose to do that, and you do sometimes, if you have two different standards, then which one applies?
Okay.
And then you're going to send people off to haggle about this in court or get attorney general
opinions. No, I get
that.
But your personal, I know you don't speak for Representative Holberg, you don't speak for anyone else other than Minkoji and yourself, but your personal objection to this isn't giving the MIM the authority to do something that's reasonably necessary to carry out the program. That's not your objection. Your objection is that by putting those words in this bill, it calls into question whether Chapter 13 applies or this new standard applies.
Mr. Chairman,
is that correct?
That's essentially correct.
Okay.
Now, what really applies?
Okay.
That's the question.
I got it.
Okay.
So the thread that I'm seeing, members, and it's not going to address everyone's concern on every issue, is there may be a way to do this that where less is more, where maybe already in the Data Practices Act or maybe already in the Open Meetings Law, we have stuff in there in current law that allows the MIM, Representative Atkins, Mr. Turpin, others to do what they're trying to do. So redundancy is something, and I would never do it without checking with Mr. Gehring, but I think we can do that offline. If it's just a question of redundancy, that's great. I think we can accomplish that pretty easily, it sounds to me. Representative Atkins will be the final arbiter, and if he's not comfortable with that, then he has the final say. But it seems to me that's something we can accomplish. That's a different issue than some of the others that we've talked about. But if it's just redundancy, we can accomplish that pretty easily. You look like you want to say something, Representative Holberg.
I'm just... it's been brought to my attention that MCHA doesn't have any special open meeting law, you know, provisions or exemptions other than if there's an appeal by an enrollee, they can close the meeting for that. But there's an example of an organization that deals with a lot of health data they identified a problem in order to protect enrollees' information. They gave the right to the data subject to ask for the meeting to be closed and allow for that provision to take place. So I don't think this is as difficult as maybe some people might think.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Gehrman.
Thank you.
You know, I don't know if there's, Representative Holberg, what you want to do about the amendments here. I know we're not going to probably formally adopt them and vote on language, but it might be useful to at least highlight the subject matter of each, if that's something you want to do. I assume they're your amendments or Representative Scott's amendments. And if either or both of you want to at least describe them and see if that, and if it's a moot issue now because we've discussed it, that's great. But I think it'd be useful, since they were submitted and they're part of the public record here, just to discuss them. So on the first one, which is the A57 amendment, I don't know who wants to claim that or describe generally what it's trying to accomplish, and whether we want to take up that issue.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, this is just the exception to the rulemaking. It would allow for expedited rules for the first year. I believe it's been a while since I looked at these, but, you know, almost all these go back to the you need to make the case why you're so special that you don't have to follow the standard, so we didn't like the exceptions
okay.
to rulemaking in the bill.
And I have to defer to Chair Lesh, since he's the one who gave us our mission here today. This particular amendment doesn't pertain to either the open meetings or data practices Act, so I don't know whether we want to spend a lot of time on it unless, Mr. Chair, you think we ought to. But this seems to be talking about the administrative procedures and rulemaking. So
it does, Mr. Chair, it does. However, I would hope that it would be, the spirit behind this would be considered in the context of any amendment offered in GovOps, because this committee can then say that they have considered it and GovOps wouldn't have had to spend an exhaustive amount of time on it. Obviously, if it's in their jurisdiction, it would, but it's my intent that if it's not addressed there, it should be addressed here.
Okay.
And well, then, Mr. Chair, this also deletes the exceptions to the open meeting law.
Okay. Got it. The next amendment, the A58 amendment.
And this goes back, Mr. Chair, to the structure of the bill itself, and that instead of all this discretion and exception to current law, that it would, you know, expressly authorized by law. But if we're gonna go back to approach of writing the bill that makes the assumption that they are subject to current law and then carve out exceptions, I don't, again, this is kind of a Band-Aid on a bigger problem approach. And we've made this point before.
Okay. I think we've sort of discussed that already. A59, I remember this coming up. This was the exhaustion of appeals. I don't know that we took up this amendment or really discussed it in detail, but do you care to just describe this one?
Well, again, it's basically sunshine. So that once the decision is made, that the decision, the criteria, et cetera, for the organization's decision-making process would then become public. So it kind of goes along with the design-build process, where at some point virtually everything becomes public, but you can't make it all public on the front end. And I meant to bring a chart today to kind of show how design build works. There's different data sets that become public at different parts of the process, and at the end, virtually everything becomes public.
So, Representative Hoberg, so as I read this, this just says that after all the appeals are over, the fight is over, the MIM has to publish on its website any insurance provider denied certification or permission to operate within the exchange or any organization or individual denied permission to act as a navigator or in-person assister, et cetera, et cetera. So you're basically saying, pending the fight, they might not have to disclose this stuff, but after it's all over, just like we do for, you know, criminal investigative data or any other, several other forms of either investigations, litigation, you're saying after the fight is over or the process is over, they've got to reveal. That's what you're saying. Okay.
The criteria and the decision.
Yeah. Okay. So I don't know if this is a redundancy issue either, but I don't know if Mr. Turpin or anyone wants to comment on this one, whether you think this is necessary, unnecessary, doable. Mr. Turpin?
Mr. Chair, representatives, the only concern is the use of the word work product in the final sentence, in 1.12, and just a clarification whether that's intended to be used as a term of art to apply to attorney work product, and then the conflict of whether the following language, unless otherwise prohibited by federal or state law, would then prohibit the disclosure of that. So that was the only concern that I had was, was it intended to really require the disclosure of attorney work product related to an ongoing appeal?
I see. Representative Hobart?
Mr. Chair, we would not intend to.
Right, I would assume not.
You know, I mean, that's why you have that last sentence there.
Okay. I'm seeing Mr. Gehring nodding, and so it seems to me that that last sentence would take care of it, so that attorney work product, as that term of art is known, would not be subject to disclosure. So do I understand then, Mr. Turpin, you wouldn't necessarily, and this is for the author as well, you wouldn't necessarily object to this or something like this? And we don't have the power to adopt anything here today, but this is something that you might consider?
Yes.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman. Okay. If I might, and I apologize, I've got to go talk with some bankers here shortly. I just had a request, if with the deference of the chair and members, I've listened to the testimony. I think people's heads are kind of around the same topics, and perhaps even have kind of the same ideas in mind in terms of how to move forward with it. My request would be, Mr. Chair, if you could assemble whoever you think would be the, certainly Representative Holberg would be among those, but whoever you think the right folks would be, to put together those suggestions, and ideally, and I looked at Mr. Gehring now, in a form that could be adopted as an amendment in a future committee. Again, Mr. Chair, not telling you what to do, but perhaps the group could get together one more time to, you know, and we talk about transparency and sunshine. I think it'd be nice for everybody to see that recommendation and kind of pick through it a little bit. Have the folks from the exchange, have the Mr. Gemberlings and the Mr. Neumeisters and others take a look at it, have everybody kind of give it a couple thumbs up, and then we'll take it, because I think we've got roughly, what is it today, Tuesday? We got about a week before we go to State Gov. That would just be my hope for request, if that's all right.
Representative Atkins, I think that's a great idea. And I think we're well on our way to getting to something that we could put on paper. And you're obviously, Representative Gadsden, we weren't even sure whether you, we know you have other commitments, and we understand.
Well, this has been very helpful, though. Mr. Chair, I'd be the last guy to represent myself to be a data practices expert, but I do have a keen awareness and concern about it. And based on what I've heard of the testimony, I think we got something that's going to be very helpful and a positive step in trying to make the bill a little bit better. So with that,
thanks, Representative.
thank you.
Nice exit. Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One of the things that kind of came to the surface in our civil law committee over this bill was the whole appeals process, and how I don't think that's really very clearly outlined for people, individuals that are denied or have other issues. I just don't think the appeals process is very adequate and user-friendly, if you will. I mean, one of the suggestions was that you appeal to the Federal Department of Health and Human Services, and I just don't know anyone that would have, you know, the average person that would have the financial wherewithal to do that. So I guess that's another issue that I think, and I know that's maybe not necessarily data privacy, but I think that's something that was kind of left unresolved from the Civil Law Committee, and I just would like to know some kind of direction as to where that might be addressed, if it's not coming back to civil law, where those provisions would be addressed.
Well, Representative Scott, I do remember that, and I remember your questioning on that. I guess I would ask Mr. Turpin, if I understand it correctly, and I don't pretend to be an expert on this at all, but this is that folks do have, they would naturally anyway have a couple of different options, right? They could go the federal route or the state route. I'd imagine that's probably, as to the federal route, not something we can change. I mean, they either do or don't have that right because of the ACA itself, and so we probably can't prevent that from being an option. All we can do is supplement with the state right, which apparently we've done. But you want to comment just on Representative Scott's comment about accessibility to the consumer or understandability to the consumer?
Mr. Chair, Representative, as you stated, the appeal to the Federal Department of Health and Human Services would be in addition to an appeal offered by the state, and an individual could choose to avail themselves of that method of appealing a determination of the exchange. So if there was a state appeal, they were not pleased with the determination of that, they would have a right to appeal that up to HHS. Similarly, as provided in this bill, they would have a state judicial review available. I think one of the outstanding questions is how those would work in conjunction, and whether they would be required to exhaust either the HHS appeal, or whether they'd be required to exhaust the state review prior, but that is available, and it is at an individual's option to be able to avail themselves of that. So it's an additional layer of appeal right that would exist above and beyond the state appeal.
And Mr. Turpin, this, I think Representative Scott brings something up that's quite legitimate, which is making sure that the everyday person can understand this stuff, and it may be one of the frustrating things that we just have to maybe resign ourselves to is this is a new creature, and it maybe we won't know how to improve those things until it has been up and running for, say, a year, and if we really see that confusion really making it a lot clearer for folks. I don't know any other way, better way to address it, but I think Representative Scott's right to point out that people might get confused over this kind of thing. Representative Holberg or Representative Scott or anyone else, I just want to touch on that last amendment, A60, if anyone cares to
and Mr. Chair,
explain
this
or discuss it.
This language is modeled after the audit trail in the cybers criminal database, and basically it's that accountability piece to ensure that the system has an audit trail, that data subjects have a right to find out who's been accessing their information, and that people that are using the system, their access is limited by a need to know, and that there's proper training, etc. So it's a kind of a good government. In the old days, somebody had the keys to the file box and nobody could get in there. Now we have to make sure that electronically that individuals are only given access to that information that's necessary for their job, and kind of following along the Fair Information Principles Act, a data subject should have the right to know who is accessing their information and for what purposes. And if you don't have an audit trail in these systems, you have no way to know that.
Representative Holberg, did you take this? Do you know if this language is modeled on other language, or is this?
Mr. Chair, I'd have to defer to Matt Gehring. I told him take a look at the cyber stuff and write me an amendment for this. I haven't actually compared the language myself.
Mr. Gehring, could you just tell us the origin of this language?
Mr. Chair and members, yes. So this language that's in here is a pretty significantly condensed version of existing language that applies to the cybers, which is a criminal records database system. So a lot of there's a lot of additional provisions in that section that relate specifically to criminal information, but this is the audit piece and the access piece that exists there. It's basically just copied and pasted for these purposes here.
Thank you, Mr. Gehring. I'm wondering, Mr. Turpin, if you care to comment, if you want to reserve comment after conferring with the author, who's obviously not here, that's okay. But if you care to and can you comment on the acceptability of this language?
Mr. Chair, representatives, and I defer to Mr. Gehring in his expertise, but one of the issues that I would raise would be because it broadly identifies all data held by the marketplace, my concern is this may actually limit the public access to data that we would be providing anonymously on our website. So it says only personnel may enter, update, or access data held by the marketplace. Well, we hold data that's public and is intended to be public. And so I think the intent is to say for those that private information and that information about individuals, and that maybe that can be accessed, you know, appropriately by an individual themselves, the subject of the data, or by individuals with appropriate security role and authorization due to their job. So I think that was my only concern with it. And
okay.
And just to follow up, this mirrors our construction and building of the system itself, that these are being built into the system.
Mr. Turpin, so as I understand it, if we were to change on line 1.5, flesh out just the word data and make it something else, Representative Holberg, you're saying no, but...
Oh. I think this is not an insurmountable issue, but this is a reason why we have to spend some time on this. If the concept of an audit trail and accountability and a data subject having access to the audit trail and knowing who has their information and what purposes, if that's agreeable to the author and his representative, we can fix the problems with the language as presented, but the concept I think is an important one and would hope that you would support.
Mr. Turpin?
Mr. Chair, Representative, and I can't speak for Representative Atkins, but I certainly, it is one that we support, and again, that one is that a principle that is being built into the system as it's being created.
Representative Holberg, I think we can reasonably flesh out language, make it a little more specific so it's not literally all data. I mean, you know, on everything, every kind of data that's compiled or held. Members, I think we are about to end on time. I think this is useful, and it'll be up to Representative Lesch whether he wants to have us convene another formal meeting, but I think the next step now is for one or some of us to, or some of us to confer with Mr. Gehring and see if we can get more specific about language. This is a great start, and Representative Atkins, Mr. Turpin seem receptive to this. So with that, members, Representative,
if I might, given that there's going to be some kind of work in the interim, and I'm assuming, I think that there's a civil law subcommittee committee page, would it be fair to, for the people in the room and in the public that are interested in the subject, that when we have a draft, we'll post it on that committee website?
I think that's fair. Why don't we commit to doing that? We'll post whatever our beginning product is of proposed language on the website so that the public has a chance to weigh in. And if there's a future committee hearing, can testify as well.
And as like an unofficial document.
Right. We'll call it an unofficial engrossment or proposal or something like that. Thank you. The subcommittee is adjourned.